You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we're coming to you from separate locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time home of Eugenio Suarez. Wow.
There it is. I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington. It is a Caleb Ferguson emergency podcast.
I thought you were going to say home of John Schneider for an extended period of time.
Wouldn't say that.
All right, we'll get to that later on the pod, in the emergency pod. But the MLB trade deadline has passed, and the Seattle Mariners have transacted.
They did the freaking
and,
thing.
Oh, how they transacted.
They did it.
We were just a little terrified for a long period of time about what it might look like if they traded for Eugenio Suarez and brought him back to Seattle. Is the one of the MLB's leaders in home runs this season, a year and a half after being salary dumped by the Mariners. But you read the market correctly. I got to give you credit on this one. Your years of negotiating with artists have given you a certain skill here.
Yeah, I was like, we'll settle for nothing less than Tyler Locklear. That's what it's like. Getting this notification, even without knowing who was traded, I was still excited.
I mean,
let me just say,
look, we were going to talk ourselves into bringing Gino back, no matter what the cost of
it. It was never an issue with Gino. And I think that's where we should start is. Just let's talk about the compensation later, but also just this Mariners roster with Eugenio Suarez in it and what it is going to look like. Some people have been saying that the team in general had no holes before this trade deadline.
And you can tell that they had no holes by their success against the A's.
It's baseball. Shit happens. But do you know how many teams in baseball now have three players in the top 25 in the MLB by WRC+?
Three?
There are two teams.
Okay.
And you know that one of those is your Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, but it would have been a really strange trivia question to drop here if it had just been like the Dodgers and the Cubs or the Yankees and the Cubs.
The Cubs are the other one. So, I mean, that right there makes up six of the top 25. But for the Mariners, a team that the entire offseason, right, the entire conversation about this team, not even the offseason, maybe the last two decades of conversation about the Mariners has been how they can't hit.
Maybe even the last two nights, right, until the Gino trade got announced.
Oh, literally.
In the seventh inning.
I mean, the only bright spot was the third of those players who's in the top 25 at WRC+. And a lot of the chatter has been about how Jerry Dipoto hasn't been able to go out and get the player. Back-to-back years now, he has acquired one of those players who are in the top 25 of WRC+.
Back-to-back years, he's gotten one of the best hitters to change teams, if not the hitters to change teams.
Extended the third of those players. And this doesn't even include Julio Rodriguez, who pure talent-wise might be the best of any of these players. So when you look at that Mariners roster right now with those four hitters that we just talked about, the Josh Naylor addition, J.P. Crawford, like the team is looking extraordinarily deep. And there was a moment in, I want to say, like right before the trade deadline where Cal was just raking and it was like teams were starting to be like, we can walk Cal.
Yeah.
And now Cal's hitting a little bit worse than he was then. But also, there's no you can walk Cal because there's going to be somebody dangerous after him. Is basically from that moment I was talking at forward, Randy Rosarena got hot. Julio Rodriguez got hot. They traded for Naylor. They traded for Suarez. Like everything has coalesced into this perfect moment for the Seattle Mariners for the rest of the season.
I mean, a thing that I think was very, it landed with us in a very specific way, was watching the Texas Rangers at the tail end of the 2023 regular season, even in a game that the Mariners won on J.P. Crawford's walk-off double to keep their playoff hopes alive for those wonderful few days. Like, believe it or not, once upon a time, the Texas Rangers were not built primarily on pitching and defense. They actually had a lot of good hitters on their lineup, including in their lineup, including Mitch Garver, and just the sheer depth of that lineup and the fact that there was like you'd get to the seventh and eighth.
Can you name the two players on that roster who played for the Mariners this year?
Well, Leody Taveras.
And you know the other one.
Mitch Garver.
Yeah. It's just Taveras is a hilarious one. That was the roster. But
I did manage to retain that name this time.
That
we'll
was
see.
kind of incredible. Next time. I thought you were gonna struggle with that one.
Yeah, I think that was Leody Taveras' good season. Anyways, there was no relief in those orders. And the Mariners, even as good as they have been offensively this season, certainly when you get into the Cole Young, Ben Williamson stretch of the lineup, there had been a degree of relief. And now there is considerably less of that now that Gino is stepping into Ben Williamson's spot in the order, even if it's going to be a defensive downgrade. So,
yeah.
Okay, this was where you were going to say something.
They're basically built like, I was looking at the box score from that game. They're built like one of those teams. They're built like, and the Rangers obviously carried that through to the World Series that year. And it was something that when you see a lineup like this, it's really, really difficult because you can't pitch around anybody. And if somebody gets hot, that makes it even harder to deal with. And right now the Mariners have, you know, it's funny because they had such a difficult series against the Athletics, but like Randy's still hitting, Julio is still hitting, you know, these things are still happening. And when they can put that all together, I think they can be from this moment forward the best team in baseball.
And interesting, the lineup has recently dropped as we record this for tonight. Randy Arozarena leading off tonight. JP Crawford is down to the eight hole. So JP, who has been one of your offensive stalwarts through this era, is now part of that bottom of the order.
It's about where he belongs, though, right now with the way that JP is playing. Like, it's a thing that Dan has kind of liked also to have, you know, like JP hit ninth for a long time. Right. It's not a place that he's unfamiliar with. JP's kind of
he's hitting eighth. Cole Young is hitting ninth.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised they have him at eighth, but this is not even to mention Canzone and the way that Polanco started.
Right.
Like it is one after another in this Mariners lineup, and Gino is the last piece. So we're gonna see what it looks like in Seattle again. But we know that he knows how to hit here. I think the adjustment period is gonna be different than it was for players like Garver and Polanco. He's gonna be able to adjust back to it, and also most importantly, think about how differently we were talking about 2 years ago. Think about how differently the vibes are this trade deadline than the trade deadline we sat through two seasons ago when the Mariners they telegraphed to the world and to Cal Raleigh that they were throwing in the towel in the season. This year, they are telegraphing to the world, we are going all in.
This is where I disagree. And that's where I think we have to discuss what the return was for Gino Suarez, because they didn't go all in. They didn't give up the prospects.
But they went all in on, they went and got the player. They didn't need to give up the prospects. It's a double win there for Jerry DePoto.
I agree.
They were able to go all in. And, you know, like there's maybe degrees of going all in even further with prospects. There might have been hypothetical trades. You know, no good hitters under long-term team control were traded at the deadline. I'm not surprised by that because it's just a difficult thing to do. It's a long conversation to have if you're going to trade a player like that. And there are some teams that have held on to those players too long, right? But
that's why Cleveland Guardians this offseason need to dump Stephen Kwan.
It's more about the going all in piece is they're telling this team, they're telling the fans, they're telling the team themselves, we are trying to do it this year. 2025 is going to be a season that the Mariners were willing to do whatever they could to try to make the playoffs and win playoff series.
See, they didn't do whatever they could because if they had picked up Duran and given up a couple of top prospects for him, that would have been whatever it takes. And I don't think that would have been a good decision. I think they struck the perfect balance. The thing about this trade deadline is it's got something for everybody. Like there is a significant portion of the fan base who is like, screw 2030. The world could end tomorrow. Let's win right now. And I think that part of the fan base is going to be pleased and satisfied by trading for Eugenio Suarez and Josh Naylor, it should be pointed out. And yet, kind of the longer-term view part of the fan base who didn't want to see the team give up on their top prospects, they didn't. I mean, they paid it. It's not like they gave away nothing. for these two players. I do think, you know, Tyler Locklear's AAA performance, we talked on this very podcast just those 2 days ago.
I know.
About how
I know.
Excited we were to
they
see
were
him.
Talking post game about Mariners transactions, and it was like, you know that Tyler Locklear has been traded. They were like, the transactions we do know for sure, Tyler Locklear has been recalled from AAA Tacoma. And I'm like, okay.
Which was your favorite part of this Tyler Locklear stint?
Oh, I'm kind of sad he didn't get in that bat, but obviously they must have known that he was. When Cole Young pinch hit in the ninth, it was like...
I mean, it had already been reported that he was in the trade by that point.
That Locklear was? No, it wasn't. I don't think.
Yeah, it was. That was shortly, almost immediately after... the trade was reported. Daniel Kramer of
maybe that was
MLB.com.
Right after like that, but I hadn't heard about the trade at that point. I saw Cole Young pitch inning and I was like, something's afoot here. I thought Williamson might have been traded as well. He hit the ball hard. I'll give Cole Young credit on that. He hit it right at somebody, but he hit the ball hard.
And convenient for Locklear, he was gonna have to go to Seattle to Sacramento anyway.
Yeah, it was convenient for everybody.
It worked out perfectly, except for, I mean, not necessarily for Gino, because as I noted on Blue Sky, on the Pelton Guys Blue Sky, I don't think anyone would regularly schedule Detroit stopover in Sacramento, change planes, and then fly to Seattle.
It's a fast flight, and it's a fun flight. And the Mariners were so excited about having him back. It's funny that
they kept it a secret from the team that he was getting on the flight is pretty awesome.
We treat it like... Eugenio Suarez is like coming back, or he's like, I'm back home. I've dreamt about coming back.
This is our Damian Lillard.
But it's hilarious to me that he spent two seasons here. And for all intents and purposes, it's not like he didn't ask for a trade from the Diamondbacks, but we only can view it through Seattle Mariners' perspective. So it's just like, Gino must have been so excited to be back home. And I'm like, I'm sure he was happy about being traded here, a place that he knew vis-a-vis somewhere else. But like, Gino, this is not like Gino didn't play here for a decade. Or something. Well, like a lot of these players are new on the roster. You know, like the amount of players who are in this lineup that played with Eugenio Suarez is Rally, Julio, Canzone, JP. It's not that much of the, obviously, like there's pitching staff, others, but it wasn't like we traded him this offseason and he's like, I'm back.
He's going to be shocked when he gets here and starts asking where Scott Service is.
But also, baseball.
Not even a chuckle at that.
Baseball is about winning. And it also is about having players that we like. And we loved Gino Suarez basically from the jump. So this is even when we didn't even realize it was a Gino Suarez trade, right? When we thought it was a Jesse Winker trade, all of a sudden we were like, what about that guy? but he's a player who's not only like Josh Naylor. I didn't know that much about, right? Like I know the name, I've probably seen him hit a few times, but Gino is just, it's going to feel really natural. And that's what's even more fun about this, is that you could have one of the best hitters in baseball, and we already built in like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's good vibes only. And look, you know, ultimately you got to win some games to maintain those vibes, but especially in the wake of a disappointing loss last night and losing that series to the A's, having the excitement of not only making the trade, but getting to bring Suarez on the flight home, like it was as good as you could have possibly imagined. I think
I want to talk shit about Justin Turner's quote when he left, but it was just like, not quite the same Justin Turner. He's also on one of the best hitting teams in baseball, so I can't exactly, but like, it's not the same as getting to know Justin Turner again. This is a Eugenio Suarez. This isn't Carlos Santana. You know, like this is a move that's really exciting. And back-to-back years, two of the most fun players on the team near the trade deadline. So,
yeah, I sometimes I know I brought this up on the podcast before, that when I was working for the Storm and the team first went independent in 2009, or no, I guess this was before then, in 2008, when they got bought by local ownership, hired Brian Agler, brought in Cheryl Swoops and Yolanda Griffith, two WNBA Hall of Famers, top 25 players of all time. There was like a list that the sales department had maintained of like, here are the reasons people said they weren't interested in tickets. Also brought in Swin Cash. I probably should mention her, also a Hall of Famer. These were the reasons people said that they hadn't bought tickets. And it's like, oh, I don't like the coach. Well, we got a new one. I'm unhappy that it's Oklahoma City ownership. Nope, got rid of them. Got new local ownership. You need more star players. Guess what? We did all that. It was like, you fixed all the things. And that's a little how I feel about the Mariners at this trade deadline.
The thing that you're not accepting is that, like, people will complain about anything.
I acknowledge
there are people
that.
Who are out there in the world who are still complaining about this Mariners roster. I assure you they exist.
I don't
or saying
that.
That they gave up too much for Gino. I guarantee you that that person exists, but fuck that person. So on the only bad part about this trade, in my opinion, was that I didn't get to deliver a retired bitch to someone. That it would be a little bit more exciting for the emergency pod. But even on the package, so right, like it comes out, we knew that it was Tyler Locklear and two pitching prospects, and we're kind of waiting with bated breath. Where I'm like, I don't want to comment on this. I think we would have been fine. Again, we would have talked to ourselves into it if it was almost anybody. But then seeing who the prospects
just didn't want Gerangelo Senja.
No, absolutely not.
Just from an excitement standpoint, and obviously, if it had been Anderson, like that would have been a real bummer.
There's no fucking chance. I don't even think they can trade Kate Anderson.
Is that a rule?
But it was never in a billion years. Sloan was the other one who was possibly like, that was the one that was more of a stress.
That's just a name to me.
They were not going to trade Kate Anderson. But it's also just like, are you going to trade one of your top 10 prospects? And it's funny because thinking about Tyler Locklear, yes, we talked positively about Tyler Locklear a week ago. It was in a hitter's league. There's this change that happened, and sometimes that matters and sometimes that doesn't matter with hitters. He made a change to his swing slightly where his hands were. And I'm like, if all it takes is a AAA hitting coach to fix Tyler Locklear, like, first off, get this person in with everybody. Second off, at some point, he probably should have been better than Rowdy Tellez and Donovan Solano. Because yeah. The threshold to get to the majors wasn't that high. And if the Mariners actually felt like Tyler Locklear was that much better than Donnie Barrels and Rowdy Tellez, he would have been here.
That's probably true.
So I'm a little bit like, and Tyler Locklear might be good. Tyler Locklear may be a good MLB player. We may regret this at some point.
But that's fine. Like,
you have to trade. That's the thing. It is always a risk. It is about basically making the lowest possible risk that you can make when you're trading prospects. The Mariners have won these trades. They've lost these trades. They've had players who are prospects that got much better over time. I mean, you look at the trade that they made with the Padres that netted them Munoz and Ty France, and it's like the Mariners might have had the four best players in that trade. So sometimes it works out in your favor. Sometimes it doesn't. Who knows? But process-wise, Tyler Locklear is a little bit older. We have a pretty good sense of what he can do. He's not playing in a premium position. He played in the majors, and he wasn't good. And he's only been good in the minors. I mean, he's been good, but like he's only been as good as he has been for a couple of months now. And that's a pretty small sample size to assume that somebody is completely transformed as a player. So I think Jerry DePoto is an A+. I know. Do you give those? You only give A's?
Absolutely not. Under no circumstances. The A+ doesn't exist. A is already a perfect grade.
Okay. This is an A trade deadline for Jerry DePoto.
Yeah, I think it probably has to be. I mean, maybe you could say A- that they could have used one more arm in the bullpen. We haven't talked about Caleb Ferguson at all. I was not hoping for John Duran or what if
they... I mean, Duran didn't go for quite as much, but we saw what relief pitching was going for. And if the market value for relief pitching was that, obviously there's a little bit more team control for the relief pitchers. But if relief pitching was going for that amount of prospects, I think the Mariners are fine to have not sat this one out, but to have gone small on the relief pitching.
Yeah, I agree.
They still have
that.
Brash, and they still have Spire, and they still have Munoz. You know,
someday Gregory Santos. You never know.
It would have been, you know, you want to have a lot of relief pitching as you're heading toward the playoffs, but also the thing that makes relief pitching a little bit less important is being able to score runs.
I mean, I mentioned that my ESPN colleague David Schoenfeld is his winners and losers of the trade deadline, the big winner, your Seattle Mariners.
They got one of the best hitters in the league. They went out and got the second best hitter, who would probably be the best hitter almost any other Mariners season of the last 20 years, right? I'd like to see what some of Ichiro's WRC pluses were during this time period. But like, who probably would be the best hitter on the Mariners in many of these seasons. And they went out and just got him for very little at the deadline. That doesn't happen.
Yeah, we've already acknowledged this.
It's a coup. It is a coup what the Mariners did. I thought there was no chance they were getting out of there with without giving up a like legit top 10 prospect.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably in hindsight, what should have been a tell is the fact that although Locklear was identified, the prospects took so much longer to be identified. Like, if it was someone as famous and as important as the people that we were thinking about, that probably would come out pretty quickly, even if the Locklear piece of it might have just been sort of like a logistical thing of, you know, it's more important to notify everyone that he's been traded so that they don't play him in the game he's currently playing.
Locklear is just kind of an organizational afterthought as of a week ago.
Suarez has a 143 WRC plus, so I need to see what Ichiro's.
Yeah, well, I want to see historical Ichiro's WRC plus. I bet there's two seasons, maybe one.
I like that it's historical Ichiro, as if it's an artifact.
He's not on the team anymore.
No, okay. His best season was 131 in 2004.
2009?
2004.
That was his best one?
Yeah.
What was his good season? Was that was four. One yeah, was the was MVP. So they just traded for a player who's better than your Hall of Famer. Better. Hashtag not my Hall of Fame. Than your Hall of Famer. They just went out at the deadline and traded Tyler fucking Locklear and Juan Burgos. I refuse to pronounce his name correctly. For a player who's better than any season Ichiro ever had.
Is currently having a better
Ichiro off- Suzuki retire, bitch! Sorry, I had to deliver one. It's an emergency pod. Come on.
Did you have to? You could have done whoever the Diamondbacks GM is. I don't know.
No, I like that guy.
That's true. Don't retire yet. maybe the Yankees GM for trading for Ryan McMahon instead. He's having a better offensive season thus far than any full Ichiro offensive season. Ichiro had 7.4 WAR that year. Gino currently with 3.2 this year. His career is high as 4.4.
Mike Hazen's my guy.
Today,
think about how many players we like that we've got. I mean, they got Ketel Marte. I don't know if
it's not exactly deal, right? Like. I mean. Hey, they did make that trade for Paul Sewald at the 2023 trade deadline. 2023, clearly a season of record for us. The Diamondbacks went to the World Series and were the ones on the opposite end of that Rangers defeat. So, very, very, they've gotten some positive results out of these trades. Also, you know who they traded for that worked out pretty well for the Mariners?
Mariners traded for?
No, who the Diamondbacks traded for the Mariners that it worked out pretty well.
Who, Randy Johnson?
Well, no, I was referring to in the current era where these teams are traded a lot.
I said Ketel Marte.
Eugenio Suarez.
Oh, and Eugenio, yes, yeah.
I mean, from a value proposition standpoint, did they give up anything in that trade?
Hold on, there was a player.
Because Rojas was obviously in the Sewald trade with Canzone. He just was part of replacing Suarez in the aggregate. To get him is a salary dump and then turn around and trade him for two reasonable prospects and Tyler Locklear. Like a pretty amazing piece of business after getting the 36.
Carlos Vargas. Carlos Vargas and Sebi Savala. I'm sorry, but like they took on more risk than the Mariners took on. Like we would have been happy to have had Gino for these last 2 years. Overall, all of these transactions have probably benefited the Mariners.
No, I agree with that part of it. So, yeah.
I mean, I hope that the Mariners, they're going to have a conversation this offseason too. I think that's the other piece is, I if it is 2 years, $40 million, do you sign Gino this offseason?
I don't know. I need to know more about the market.
Nobody knows anything about the market. There's no market. It happens in like March. Baseball offseason's terrible.
Fair point. I didn't know what the Mariners' budget is, I suppose.
But if let's say that they make the playoffs, they win. Let's say they lose in the ALCS, and Gino plays well enough, right? We're gonna be really in on the Mariners at that point. And
I mean, there's also the Ben Williamson piece of this, where if Ben Williamson's value is primarily third base defense, like you probably would have to try to trade him.
Ryan Hayes
get
traded for yesterday. Like the value of great third base defense is something, but it's not that high.
Right.
So I like Ben Williamson too. Like again, it's just good to have a lot of players in your organization who can play professional baseball. And that's kind of what the Mariners have lacked through some of these seasons.
Well, they traded three players who played professional baseball for one in this Suarez trade. So by your logic, they now have fewer professional players who can probably play professional baseball.
Didn't Jake Fraley turn out to be kind of good?
He had a moment. He had a minute there. Should we talk about the John Schneider news?
Yes, we had no more of the Mariners.
I thought we covered it. I mean, we didn't really talk about Caleb Ferguson, second lefty to the bullpen, having a nice season, you know, a bit of a journeyman, had a down 2024, splitting that between the Yankees and the Astros, but on a 1-year, $3 million deal, had played quite well for the Pirates. And I think, you know, potential value here is if you have Ferguson available to pitch to lefties, there's less need to like match up Spire. And, you know, you can save him for higher leverage spots that he has shown, you know, had got out Mike Trout coming out as a lefty, coming in as a lefty specifically to face Trout to get out of the inning the other day. Like he's earned those higher leverage opportunities, and I'm glad he's going to continue to get them. So there you go. All right, let's talk about the John Schneider piece of this. Midway through training camp, the Seahawks announced that they have extended his contract through.
I like that you said piece of this on our emergency pod, as if John Schneider has a piece of the Mariners cover. It's a separate thing.
It's a Seattle sports.
Let's talk
piece.
About the John Schneider news.
Fine. Extended through 2000. I mean, it's piece of this emergency pod. Yes, I agree.
Okay, fine. Okay, fine. Piece of this emergency pod.
Through 2031. And I got to say, I'm pretty shocked by this one. Like, my sense was that John Schneider's job was in some degree of jeopardy given the promises that were made about the post Pete Carroll future and then not making the playoffs last year. And certainly that there was going to be some pressure to prove it by deciding to trade Geno Smith and DK Metcalf and, you know, replace Geno Smith with Sam Darnold. And the Seahawks are not looking to let him prove it. They are going based on the proof of the previous decade plus in Seattle and extending him through a period of time that seems to make it very difficult to move on if things do not work out this season the way that the Seahawks hope.
I hear what you're saying, and I understand what you're saying. However, I think the piece that you're not factoring in, which was completely evident with this deal, and I think I probably felt this also, was the power that John Schneider has within this organization, which is the most right now. He is the number one person in that building right now, and outside of Jody, Like, this is John Schneider's team. It's his organization, and they're thinking of him not as somebody who's going to be here for those next 3 years. They're like, this is the person who's going to be running this team for another decade plus, right? John Schneider is the Seahawks right now, as it is. And, you know, this was, it was them showing that they believe that to be the case with this commitment. And then also, you know, the moves that he made this offseason, they were bold moves, right? And to have allowed John Schneider to have made those moves, you don't do that and say, go win next year. You allow him to do bold things and just be like, we are behind you 100% with your vision. So, right or wrong, I'm not saying I agree with this, but John Schneider has a lot of power within the organization. He has the most. He has the most power within the organization.
I think he has more power than we realized.
He won the power struggle. He has now won a power struggle with both Russell Wilson and with Pete Carroll, who are probably the two most famous people in the franchise history.
Because like, there's a lot of people who are the most powerful person in the organization, but are not six-year contract as GM powerful. I'd say most GMs are in that boat. And I do agree. I think the best case for this is you never want the GM, you know, thinking that they're GMing for their job and making a bunch of very short-term decisions.
GM that was GMing for their job and making a bunch of short-term decisions, they would just repeatedly trade first round and second round picks for players and then extend those players. And it would just be something that would be like devastating for the future of an organization. And they would do it multiple times throughout their tenure. And so we just do not want John in that position. We got to do anything we could do to not put John Schneider in the position that he might trade multiple first round picks for a safety or something like that.
And then pay the player a historic deal for a safety. I mean, like the idea of John Schneider having a few more years left on his contract. Okay. Like you know, if things do go wrong, you can still move on. The idea of extending him through 2031 just blows my mind. I cannot believe that they did this. Like, in the press release touts, you know, the history of the organization. Like, to your point, you know who else was involved in a lot of those decisions when things were going well?
The two people that he won the power struggle with. Yes.
Peter Clay Carroll was pretty involved.
Here's what I'll also say. It is hard to move on from somebody. It's also not hard to move on from somebody.
I mean, it wasn't hard to move on from Pete Carroll. Whatever John Schneider is telling Jody Allen, and Burt Cold is the other person who is a significant power player within the Seahawks organization, as he has been for a long period of time, is part of Vulcan Sports. But whatever he's telling them in these presentations during the offseason, it must be really impressive. And it doesn't have anything to do with the Seahawks advanced stats, that's for sure. But now,
are they not good? Are the projections not good? Okay.
I don't know. I haven't seen the DVOA projections yet for this year. I doubt they're particularly optimistic. But we discussed this offline, not on the pod this week. Aaron Schatz of FTN Fantasy on ESPN, as he typically writes, ranked under 25 talent in the NFL, had the Seattle Seahawks number 2 on
that
list.
I was thinking about this. So for a couple of thoughts. But before we get to those thoughts, I want to, how many players do you think are over 25 on the Seahawks roster who you would say as a starting player on the roster, like almost guaranteed starter?
So Sam Darnold. Is Abe Lucas over 25? I mean, yes. I don't necessarily know how old players are. Cooper Kupp. Whoever we're probably saying is starting at tight end is not. Some of the specialists. Okay, on defense, Leonard Williams and Julian Love. Ernest Jones IV, we think, is over 25. It's a long pause there.
Wait, no, sorry.
They just have the roster. You can look it up on there. Altogether.
Ernest Jones is not over 25.
Okay. All right, because he was one of the borderline people I was thinking about. Are we considering Jaron Reed a locked-in starter? I think we probably are. Is that, and then
Reek Willen is actually over 25.
Okay, I wasn't sure about that either.
But it's just, overall, it is just a very young team in general. So the fact that they don't have, that they have one of the best rosters under 25, it's kind of like, it's the entire roster at this point.
I'd rather have the good players be under 25.
No, I'm not 25. Saying that's necessarily wrong, but a little bit.
DeMarcus Lawrence would be the other person who's worth mentioning here as an over 25 likely starter.
The roster in general has become very young, partially because of the moves that they've made with the roster that had gotten older, which is probably the right thing to do organizationally. But they need to get a little bit of Jerry DePoto in them right now. And I think they're not great at finding value. John Schneider has not been that good at finding value for these players. You know, you look at it and what they got for DK and Geno, maybe it was the most, maybe it wasn't the most. Honestly, we don't know as a matter of fact for that. They're paying Sam Darnold maybe a little bit less than market rate, but not a lot less. You know, when you look on the opposite, it's a different sport. But when you look at the Mariners vis-a-vis, because this is a GM pod, right?
Yep.
When you look at these two GMs vis-a-vis each other, Jerry DePoto is way better at this, working within much tighter confines. He has a roster that is, FanGraphs-wise, a very likely to make the playoffs roster, working with a smaller budget than John Schneider is working with. And he has the future set up as well. Got a little bit lucky in the lottery, but even without Cade Anderson, it is still a very good minor leagues for the Mariners. They have the majors, they have young stars in the majors, and they have the next generation after that. But most importantly, they're at important positions as well. And so that list that Aaron Schatz made, all due respect to Aaron Schatz, the Seahawks, I would take almost every team's roster who has a quarterback who's under 25 over the Seahawks. Because I personally believe in Sam Darnold, and I believe that I think these were the right moves that they've made this offseason, and I think I'm a bit of an outlier. But we don't know for sure. I know a lot less. I'm more confident in CJ Stroud and in Jaden Daniels than I am in Sam Darnold for this next year and the next 5 years after that.
I would agree with that. I don't know which of the other under 25 quarterbacks you'd feel good enough about that you'd rank their rosters ahead of him, ahead of the Seahawks. I mean, Caleb
I told
Williams.
you yesterday I would take the Bears roster and I would take the Panthers roster over the Seahawks.
It's still so tough to say right now, but certainly I would say the Commanders, just on the strength of Jaden Daniels alone. I don't think you can put the Seahawks any higher than third if I were doing these, just given quarterback value.
It's just,
But
it's over, it's treating all of these positions as if they're the same,
I don't think it
and they're not. I would
necessarily
take Drake
is.
May, right?
But like the thing is, having a good quarterback is so valuable, but having an average quarterback actually isn't that valuable because those guys are pretty easy to get. That's one of the interesting things about like when you're
Which
doing the NFL
of these
top
players is
100.
average?
Yeah, you're right. Drake May hasn't gotten to that point yet. I'm saying that there's a strong likelihood that the likely outcome for Drake May is average.
I do not agree with that at all. You're way underestimating Drake May. But it's even worth like the risk, the potential of those players and how good you can be for the next, like the Seahawks window with this roster. To me, when I look at young talent, I'm like, that's great and it's good to have young talent. Every single one of them is a time bomb because they're all huge contracts. If they pay off, they are huge contracts eventually. And then there are huge contracts that you have to basically pay to get off of. After that, that's all you get is these little windows, right? In the NFL, you get these little chunks of windows, and you have to be really freaking good at finding talent in the fourth through seventh round of the draft, or even hitting on your first round picks. And I think that John has gotten better at the draft the last 3 years or so. I think that the Seahawks have been much better at drafting, but he was bad, legitimately bad for a number of seasons. And all of these things about getting better and how they've gotten off of it, it's all mistakes that John Schneider made. They've had to undo over this time period a bunch of mistakes that he made. Like, John Schneider hasn't been a good GM for a very long time. It's not like he was good 2 seasons ago or made a bunch of great moves 2 seasons ago. I mean, he seems to have drafted right with Spoon and JSN, but like, I partial credit for those. It's not like he was going crazy deep. They did end up with very good draft picks and
But
got those players.
we had this conversation offline. JSN was not a secret, yes, but all the other teams didn't draft him ahead of the Seahawks either.
No.
So.
The JSN pick was a good pick, but like, in general, I just have been mostly unimpressed with almost everything John Schneider has done. And right now, they're in a window of it's a bit of a prove it window for John Schneider, but he has the leeway from the organization to keep going after that. He'll have another generation after this. Like this young talent that the Seahawks have right now, John's gonna outlast all of them. He outlasted every player from the Legion of Boom era. And he's probably going to outlast everybody from this era as well.
I don't think I'm willing to go that far.
Really?
I'm definitely not willing to go that far because I mean Charles Cross could play here, 8 more years.
Yeah. John Schneider could be here a lot more than 8 more years.
Just because a lot of organizational power right now does not mean that will continue because at some point it's got to translate to the results on the field. And not that they've been a bad team, but they've not been a good team either. And based on what Mike Shandigar keeps telling us when he comes on about the expectations that the Seahawks are peddling internally. Like at
Those
some
are John
point,
Schneider's expectations.
yeah,
It's not
but
the Seahawks who are peddling those. John Schneider is peddling them.
he's peddling them up as well as peddling them out and
You're
down.
saying that basically, if John Schneider is telling everybody in the building every single year, we are trying to win.
No, if he's telling you every single year, we are going to win, and then they don't, at some point that's going to catch up with him. Like you can only talk him into it for so long.
I agree with you to a certain extent, but I also don't agree with you because they gave him this large deal. I agree with you. If things go horribly awry, they can get off John Schneider if they want to get off John Schneider.
Of
But
course.
their goal is not to get off John Schneider. Their goal is
But
to.
it's Pelton Cast Golden Rule. We'll see how they feel about John Schneider if things continue in a 500 or worse vein
They
when we get there.
have. They have, though. Because we're
But
sick of him,
no,
right?
that's
Fans are
you're
sick of him.
looking, you're it's 1 year of John Schneider in the Seahawks minds. 1 year.
Just because
Everything else before was
that
Pete
was
Carroll.
all Pete Carroll's doing.
Yeah.
That year, the 1 year of John Schneider didn't go that great.
And that's why I'm surprised that they gave him this extension. But it's,
I don't know.
There's a big difference between 1 year with Geno Smith as your starting quarterback and an extended window where Sam Darnold and Jalen Milroe are the quarterbacks going forward. So
fair enough. At the same time, I felt like John this offseason, I think he did a pretty good job of basically resetting the Seahawks' future right now. Like we were talking about the young roster. I think he's drafted pretty well. I thought the flip for Geno for Sam Darnold, they got quite a bit younger, they got a little bit cheaper, and they got more flexible. And whether I think Sam Darnold was a better quarterback than Geno Smith last year by a lot of metrics, you know, it's easy to just say Ryan Grubb wasn't a good offensive coordinator. Mike McDonald was figuring out year one, but we're going to see this season what that looks like. I do like Sam Darnold though. You know, I think this is a roster that can go to the playoffs in this season. What it means long-term, I don't know. And I think that John Schneider doesn't know either. And that's kind of the thing that is a little bit more concerning, which is quarterback is basically all that matters here. They could have the best players in the entire world at every other position, and it's not going to translate to a Super Bowl unless they find it, unless either Sam Darnold's the guy or they find the quarterback after that.
And now it seems more likely that John Schneider will be the one deciding on that quarterback after that if Sam Darnold is not the long-term option. All right.
So even the process for Milroe is you could make an argument that it didn't really make sense. You know, I like Jalen Milroe, but like what is the value of Jalen Milroe to the Seahawks?
Still not totally clear.
I like him, and I think they're going to try to get him on the field, but it's a little confusing. I mean, the goal, I guess the hypothetical goal is that he's better than Sam Darnold and sure. That Jalen Milroe's the starter, which, again, would be a great outcome. But then also you just spent, I don't know what Darnold's making, $14 to $20 million a year to...
I'm sorry, what?
What is the number for Darnold?
I think it's
24?
30 this year.
30? Okay. That's even more. Okay. But then you spent $30 million to go find somebody for him to beat.
That's fine. That would be a great outcome because Darnold
I agree that would be a great outcome, but like
largely off the books next year.
It's not happening to you.
They would have that window that you're talking about during Jalen Milroe's rookie contract. I hope that's a problem we can deal with, but we do know that we have one exciting problem to deal with, which is where to watch Eugenio Suarez's Mariners return game. That's what you have to deal with. You're going to be at not youth baseball, but at youth BMX.
I'll see some of it. I can't wait.
Me neither. On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.